Welcome to Top 5, a show where we count things down from number 5 all the way to number 1. This week on the show, Top 5 Movie Franchises. I think when you look at a movie franchise, I think you must have to have at least, is it 2 movies to be a franchise? I always go with 3 as a franchise.
Yeah, that's what I did when I made my list.
But all of mine have more than 3 in them. I'll just say that. So top 5 movie franchises. Matthew, since you think that you've got it licked, what do you have for your number 5?
My number 5 is a wonderful series that should never have happened. Because the initial entry was basically just meant to be kind of a fly-by-night horror film. But somehow the audiences went, holy moly, this is amazing. So my number 5 is the series of Paranormal Activity movies. I believe they've had 6 or 7 films. Also, there's kind of sort of a sequel that may or may not count that was released in Japan, so maybe 8. But the Paranormal Activity movies are basically the story of a family that keeps getting more and more haunted by an evil demon. And of course, as always happens, the first one is very mysterious and very moody, and the second one is slightly less mysterious and more explanatory. And by the time you get to the 7th movie, there's this whole lore and, you know, backstory for the demon Toby, which is absolutely ridiculous name for a demon. I would have definitely gone with Tucker or Todd.
Myself. Could be a demon dog.
Well, I mean, it's a person. Excuse me.
Could call
he actually
Ted.
Appears on screen.
At Ted would be a good one.
Ted.
Yeah.
You can't call a demon Ted.
Sure you can. I can think of a lot of people who are evil that name Ted.
As Teddyus, perhaps. But yeah, you can't just call a demon Ted. But as with so many of these things, first movie is the best. The second movie is the next best. And then you get into weird stuff until about, movie 6 or 7 starts being amazing again. They just last year released a seventh or eighth installment. I don't remember. Math is hard. That I didn't even know was coming out, but it came out at a point when the child was not going to school. So we sat and we watched it. And I'm just like, ooh. And then, of course, apparently there's another one coming in 2022. I don't know. But here's the thing. If you watch them in order, and you're like, you just sit down and you watch them all in order, it'll be the next day. And that's why it's my number 5, the Paranormal Activity series.
And if you watch them in reverse order, it's the day before.
If you watch them in reverse order, Toby comes to your house.
Nicer. Toby becomes nicer and nicer in each subsequent
Serves you a
movie.
Nice, by bebop. And then you can be like, hey, can I get a sandwich with
Speaking
this?
Of hey, here's Rodrigo Lopez. Hello, Rodrigo Lopez.
Hey.
Wait, what have you got to do with hay?
I mean, he's cool like the Fonz.
I'm sitting on a bale of hay.
There you go.
As I record this, it is supremely itchy.
There you go. Is that maybe a hint to your number 5?
I don't think so.
The supremely itchy series of movies.
So, yes. First off, I didn't get the memo that it had to have at least 3 entries. So my number 5 is a 2-entry franchise suggested.
It's okay. He only yells at me on this show. So.
Suggested by my wife. I agree. I hadn't thought about it, but my wife got into a real kick to watch Ian McGregor's filmography after we watched Obi-Wan. So we watched Dr. Sleep, but before we watched that, we had to watch The Shining. So, The Shining / Dr. Sleep as a little 2-hit combo is actually pretty good. They are not similar movies, but like all good sequels, they're not trying to be, right? Your Aliens is different from Alien. Alien is a horror movie. Aliens is mostly an action movie. And so on, right? So, I would say that if you, like, chances are if you're listening to this, you've seen The Shining and you haven't seen Dr. Sleep. I would recommend that if you have seen The Shining, that you watch Dr. Sleep. I think my wife would recommend that if you've read The Shining, that you read Dr. Sleep, and then you can construct your own events of both The Shining and Dr. Sleep, as the events of both movies, the events of the initial entries are different, and so some of the events of the following stuff have to also be different to account for the fact that
the shrubbery never came alive.
That's right. The shrubbery never comes alive. And you know, characters die that didn't die in the book, in the movie. So, you know, it's just different. So if you want to have like a real complex web of what's what, then definitely watch and read The Shining and Dr. Sleep.
There you go. All right. My number five, I don't know how many movies there are in this franchise as of yet, but there's about to be another installment come September as The Rings of Power hits the Prime Video. I am, of course, talking about the Tolkien movie franchise of The Lord of the Rings / The Hobbit / Rings of Power. It's all sorts of crazy Middle Earth. If you like the high fantasy, first of all, if you haven't ever read The Hobbit, you really should take the time and read The Hobbit. It's a very short read. You can probably get done with it in a day, maybe 2 days, over a weekend. It's a great introduction to the world of Tolkien and the Middle Earth stuff. And then if you want, you can get into The Lord of the Rings. I'll admit, when I read Lord of the Rings when I was 10, I was halfway through The Fellowship, and I was like, man, this is way over my head. Yeah, it's too many Ents running around. And so I set that aside until the movies came out, and then all my friends went nuts. And so you can get the regular version that you see in the theater. You can go and certainly have seen that, or get it on the regular DVD. Or you can get the extended version that has even more footage, or you can get the Rodrigo Thanksgiving extravaganza, which apparently if you start on Wednesday noon before Thanksgiving and you hit play, by the time that you finish watching all of the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit movies together in their expanded, extended bonus cuts, it will actually be Christmas. So there you go. My number five, the Lord of the Rings, Tolkien trilogy, quadrilogy, centilogy, whatever it is up to now. It's all of that stuff.
Trilogy right now.
I don't know what it is, but definitely go and see it.
Lord of the Rings is my number three.
Oh, okay. And why is it your number three? Because it covers that time between Thanksgiving and New Year's?
Yep. It's a good moment to talk about what my decision-making process was for being included in my list, and it was definitely, are there more good movies than bad movies?
Oh yeah,
in this, or at least fun movies, or whatever the series is trying to do. Right,
I went with you too, because there's a movie franchise that is going to be mysteriously absent from my list that everyone's going to say, but Steven, and I'm going to say, there are more bad movies in that franchise than there are good movies in that franchise.
Me as well. There were some franchises that would seem like an obvious add, but then there's more bad than good movies. So, I consider the Lord of the Rings trilogy and then the first Hobbit movie to be good. Yeah. I thought the first Hobbit movie was pretty good. Then after that, the Hobbit movies just kind of like roll off the pier onto some barrels for some hilarity down the river.
now, when you say first Hobbit movie, you are, of course, talking about the Rankin-Bass version, right?
I mean, that's the other thing is, like, some stuff I didn't include. It's like I thought about something that's not on my list, The Lion King.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, well, if I do The Lion King, am I just doing movies? So I'm not counting the Timon and Pumbaa show or The Lion Guard. So it's like Lion King, Lion King 2.
I mean, Lion King's a franchise.
Lion King 1.5.
Yeah, but then I also have to include the live action Lion King, right?
Right.
Yeah, and the Broadway play.
Well, do you have to? Well, but those aren't movies.
No,
though.
They're not movies. That's what we're talking about. Right. It's movie franchise.
Doesn't it have like a Return of Jafar straight to video sequel too?
The Lion Guard has Scar come back, so that might have been like a multiple episode thing where he comes back as like a fire ghost. Why do I know so much about the Lion Guard? Because I used to watch a lot of Disney Channel for work. But Yeah, so again, trying to put this together, I didn't include The Lion King because the live action Lion King is so bad that I'm like, I can't bring myself to like defend it, right? So anyway, Lord of the Rings for me too, just talking a little bit about my process.
Okay. And then, yeah, okay. Yes, that is very good and threw me off our count, but it does bring us to our number four. Matthew, what do you have for your number four?
My number four is actually, all of these, honestly, are among my favorites, but this may be one of my favorite movie franchises for literally my entire life. Because when I was a kid, see, folks, when Steven and I were kids, there was nothing to do in the summer. So
there was a lot of things to do during the summer.
Our local
You could go goof around. You could do shenanigans.
You could mess around.
Hijinks.
You could do nothing. You could get arrested. Our local movie theater on Saturdays would be like, all right, we've got air conditioning. Send your punks in here for like a buck. And then we'll make out like bandits on the concession stand. And so I saw when I was maybe 5 or 6, one of my very favorite movies of all time. And that movie began a franchise. And that movie was called Herbie, The Love Bug. And it's the story of an adorable little machine whose backstory at one point was apparently that he was created by the literal Nazis. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if any of that was canon or not. But throughout that first film, Herbie, the love bug, was basically just trying to, make a man rich, apparently, because a guy said, hey, you're my new race car. And, his mechanic was like, we're just going to get it drunk and we're going to race this car. And, it actually, Herbie wins the race by placing first and third because the bad guy actually cut him in half right before the finish line. So the rear half of the car, which has the engine, came in first. Never mind. It's a long story. But nonetheless, Herbie, he's his Volkswagen Beetle, goes around, came back a few years later with Herbie Rides Again, which is interesting because I don't know if you've ever seen that movie. But it literally stars First Lady of the American Stage, Helen Hayes, as Grandma Steinmetz. And I'm like, if you wanted to see a movie that had Helen Hayes playing against Keenan Wynn and an anthropomorphic Volkswagen Beetle, my friends.
Isn't Don Knotts in the second movie or is he in the third?
Third.
Movie?
Okay. Don Knotts is in Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo.
And Herbie Goes Bananas.
Wherein Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo. Nobody is actually in Herbie Goes Bananas from the first three films. But who is in it, I believe, is Charles Martin Smith. Because Herbie Goes Bananas, which is the most racist of the films, basically takes the main character's nephew. And he's like, oh, yeah, I inherited this car from my uncle. And his best friend is Charles Martin Smith. But it does have Cloris Leachman in it, and it has Dean Wormer in it. It has a lot of really good villains. Harvey Korman is in it. And then Herbie goes on a tour of Mesoamerica, Mexico, and South America. And it does not necessarily hold up.
How does the old Lindsay Lohan entry into the franchise sit with you?
There's no Lindsay Lohan movie. The last Herbie film starred Bruce Campbell, came out in 1997.
It was also called The Love Bug. If you consider that, would that throw you off of are there more good Herbie movies than bad Herbie movies?
No, because the Bruce Campbell is a very good movie. The Love Bug is a very good movie. Monte Carlo is a middling movie. Herbie Rides Again is a tour de force. It's the best of the set. And then Herbie Goes Bananas, very, very racist. Herbie Fully Loaded bothers me because of the anthropomorphic eyes.
The drunken rants were also uncalled for.
Lindsay does her thing, and that's fine. I will say that it has the same villain as Wild Things, so it's fun to imagine it being in the same universe.
Oh, nice.
Where Matt Dillon, this is what Matt Dillon did to end up down in the plains where, then Neve Campbell murdered him. Spoilers. Nonetheless, I would say that Fully Loaded ranks pretty low. Bananas ranks pretty low. The rest of them are actually pretty okay movies. When we got Disney Plus, first thing we did was watch the Herbies. And for the most part, they held up. I mean, they kept the kid in the room for an hour, hour and a half. They didn't make it to the end of any of the films, but then I don't think the child has made it to the end of any film that I've wanted to watch in, what are they, 18 now? I'm going to say 19 years. But if even if you sat down and watched all of the Herbie movies, you could get really bored and do the 5-episode Herbie the Love Bug TV show from 82. I don't know if it's available on DVD, so you probably can't. But nonetheless, I think you would have a better time than not. And, you know, Lindsay Lohan, it's fun to watch that movie and see where they digitally altered her clothing. So, you know, it's just like, hey, let's put a logo here. Wait, what? Okay.
Do you know what how the love bug was translated for that first original movie into Spanish? Like what phrase they used? Because love bug doesn't exist as a phrase.
No, but I would love to know.
It's El Cupido Motorizado. So it's motorized Cupid is what, and it's basically what the series is known as.
Yeah.
That's pretty solid.
I mean, it is. I mean, that's what in the first movie.
It's the right idea. Yeah
in the first movie, that's
the
exactly
first and the second movie, actually.
Yeah.
Because the second movie actually ends with a wedding, if I'm not mistaken. Ken Berry marries one of the women from Knott's Landing.
There you go. All right, Rodrigo, what do you have for your number four? Please don't say it's the love bug.
It is not
the mechanical Cupid.
Say it's the love bug.
It is not the motorized Cupid. But it is a movie that involves cars and love, but that love is the love of family. I am talking, of course, about the Fast and Furious movies. I think generally the consensus is they're called the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking, of course, about The Fast and the Furious.
Mm-hmm. Too Fast, Too Furious.
Too Fast, Too Furious.
Three Fast, Furious, Three Furious. Drink.
Here we Furious
four
again.
Fast, yeah. Furious.
Yeah, Furious.
For a Furious Dollars More.
Yeah, for a Furious Dollars More.
Yeah.
BJ Revenge, and the Furious.
Yeah, Revenge of the Rock. Mm-hmm. I think there's one in there.
Furious Uzi. That does
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Land Before Time.
Right. A series
Littlefoot meets Vin Diesel.
I Am Furious Yellow.
The underground prequel, The Iron Giant.
Right. Furious is the most beautiful color.
Yeah. Fast Man and Robin, Go-Go, something like that.
There are in fact now the movies are in the double digits, I believe.
Yeah.
And what started as a pretty straightforward film about
family.
DEA agents.
It's about family.
Like I think DEA agents like infiltrating an illegal racing thing. Maybe it wasn't the DEA. I don't remember.
No, it was like
a government agency. Yeah.
It was like 21 Jump Street. They needed hip young agents.
Yeah,
because they were hijacking not trains in the first movie, semis full of electronic gear.
But Lance from Varsity Blues was like with the LAPD in the first one, I wanna say.
Yeah, so
no, he was FBI agent, I'm pretty sure.
So
I have to go back and watch it all over again.
Yep, you're gonna have to. But so here's the deal. What started out as I was going to say, what started out as a film about like fast cars and
furious people
and furious transistors becomes this like really wacky, really over the top, like completely unbelievable franchise where like a bunch of like cars drag a like building size safe across through a street at top speed, like it doesn't even slow them down. Cars drive from one building into another or possibly like on the side of a building for some amount of time. Cars like parachute onto the Arctic at some point. And I appreciate it because if you take the time to watch those movies, you can see their priorities change, but they actually change slowly enough that your priorities can change along with them. I feel like, you know, Tokyo Drift comes pretty early. It's like the third movie.
Yeah.
And it kind of flips the script on us. We go to like a different country. It's like there's lots of different stuff going on. It's a different main character. And that one, if you can get through that one, not that it's bad, but it's like
the best one of the series.
Yeah. If you can get through that one and then keep watching, then, you know, you can then at your leisure go to, God, I forget, what is it, like something in Hob?
Oh, yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
The Fast and Furious presents Calvin and Hobbes, I believe.
Yeah, the Fast and Furious presents
Jason Statham and
Jason
the Rock.
Statham and The Rock.
Yeah.
So that's a spinoff off of the series. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, it's easy to look at Fast and Furious and think of it as a joke. But again, if you're watching the movies in order, it isn't necessarily not a joke, and it just kind of easily transitions you from one to the other. It's not like, for example, when you get a new Bond and like all of the priorities of the creative team change, right? From the Brosnan Bond to the current Bond. It's a huge difference, right? And often between other Bonds, you know, because they're like, it's the 70s now. We can't do this stuff anymore. We're going to change everything, right? And it's like Fast and the Furious doesn't do that. It actually changes very slowly. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
Every time Bond regenerates, we get like a whole new costume and we get a sequence where he's like, oh, who am I?
Speaking of main actors regenerating, my number four, the entire Batman franchise. I don't know if we need to say too much about it. I think everybody who's listening knows all about the Batman and the many deaths of his parents and the woes and the me's that happen from the death of the
parents. Rocketed from the dead planet Gotham. He was bitten by a giant radioactive space spider.
Come on now. Everybody knows the story, Matthew. Let's
how he became the Hulk.
Yes,
that's right.
Exactly.
We can make fun of the Fast and Furious, but we can't. Batman is a yard too far is what you're telling me.
Of course. You don't talk ill of the Batman. He'll come for you in the middle of the night, Matthew. You got to watch out.
Anyway, now, do you start that series in 1966?
No, because I start with 89 Batman. Only because the Adam West Batman is more of a let's capitalize on this TV series. So I don't, because that's where it comes from, is from the TV series. I don't count that as the movie franchise Batman. So
do you consider the Burton series?
Yeah, like the super old serials.
Right.
Oh no. Like I don't. No. Not the capital ones either. I start from 89 forward.
So like the four Burton/Schumacher movies, do you keep them as a piece with the,
they're all confusing even guy? all the reboots, all the cod pieces, all the nipple chest plates. They're all part of it.
And then you go into the three Nolan movies and then Batman.
Why did you say that name? All of that.
Okay.
So what's your,
I think what Matthew is getting at is there's
Matthew
no,
is like, well, you didn't see 69 Batman.
Why would I say 69 Batman? That's just dirty.
Yeah. That didn't show in our town. Yeah. You have to go to the big city to see the 69 Batman.
Either that or you had to rent it like on a VHS from a guy down by the river.
Hey, Matthew, what do you have for number three?
My number three is kind of unique because it started out as basically just a fly-by-night horror movie, but the audiences really, really responded to it. And somehow it blew up into something much bigger. And over the course of, I think, 7.5 movies now, because there's one in the can or being made or some such, the Night of the Living Dead series may be the most successful franchise to come out of a movie that literally cost $18.95. Not to get into, but to make. The original Night of the Living Dead was made by George Romero and like nine guys that he knew from high school in 1967. And it is honestly the origin of the modern pop culture zombie, the flesh eating, the, oh no, I've been bitten by a zombie. All of these things, the, oh, people die and then they rise up again. You have to shoot them in the head to stop them. All of this comes out of that movie. And what a lot of people, I think, don't recognize is after that first movie, there's like a decade of nothing.
And Dawn of the Dead doesn't come out for another 10 years. But after Dawn of the Dead, we start getting these regular, like every half decade or so, we pop back in. So there's Dawn of the Dead. Day of the Dead comes out in 85. Then we jump to Land of the Dead, which is a good 20 years. But then they make up for it with Diary of the Dead, which is basically the real world when people started to stop being polite and start getting eaten. And then, of course, we get to the big, what was the big one that What's-His-Face did? Survival of the Dead or Flam of the Dead? Steven and I had a long discussion about the Zack Snyder of the Dead movie.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it is. It's technically...
I thought it was Day of the Dead again.
Yeah, he did Day of the Dead.
He did Day of the Dead, but he then did he
Dawn
did
of
like
the Dead,
a,
Day of the Dead.
He did Dawn of the Dead, and then he did a quasi.
Rise of the Planet of the Dead, Dead and Dead right. Again, Dead by Dawn.
Right. Too yeah. Dead, Too Furious.
Yep, exactly.
Dead Man Returns.
Are you talking about the one with King Koopa in it?
The one that you're always trying to tell me to watch because it's basically a dead guy bank heist or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The one that's on Netflix. Yeah, yeah. That one's a good one.
Yeah, with the Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
Apparently, the one that is in the works reputedly is based on the late George Romero's treatment, something that he had put together to try and tie things in that make sense, because he was not happy with the way Survival of the Dead tied up his chunk of the story. And I'm talking mostly about the Romero films, but there are a ton of little spiky offshoots. Return of the Living Dead Part 2 is one of the most enjoyable trashy movies you'll ever watch. I highly recommend it. I don't know if I'd call it part of this quote-unquote franchise, but it's
the Return of the Living Dead movies are pretty different, right? They're like The zombies have like different rules, and I think they can talk sometimes.
Yeah,
send more cops.
They're getting smarter. That's the whole part when you get to King Koopa zombies.
King Koopa zombies.
Yeah,
and then of course you do have. There's a remake of Night of the Living Dead from 1990 with different people surviving, so different people dying and different people living, which is interesting. And then, of course, there's a Marvel that is supposed to be canonical, written by Romero, a Marvel comic book series that brought the living dead, but also somehow brought us into vampires. So I don't know if I actually finished that. But if you get a chance to just sit down and watch all of the Night of the Living Dead movies back to back, first of all, it won't take you all the way till Christmas. But it will keep you up nights because they are some creepy, creepy films.
All right.
And if you do chance to watch Night of the Living Dead, make sure you're not watching the weird version that's been in the public domain. That's like a guy who made a copy of a copy of a copy. There is actually a really good print out there. And I think Retroplex plays it that has some returned scenes that had been taken out through the video that kind of circulated around in the
keep zombie dance sequence. Tapes. Yeah.
The zombie dance sequence. Then the part where, you know, the zombie is like, it's all about family and I'm going to eat yours.
And then Batman shows up and kills all the zombies. Right. Yeah. All right.
Very cool. I'm pretty sure Batman got eaten.
All right. We are into our number threes. Rodrigo has already shared his number three. My number three is the Spider-Man franchise, ranking above the Batman franchise. Cause I think that there are more Spider-Man movies that are good than there are Spider-Man movies that are bad.
It has a better percentage because there are so many Batman movies.
I think it's with the Batman, I think you're probably looking at 65% of them are good movies. I think with Spider-Man, you're probably looking at 67-70% of the Spider-Man movies. And of course, there are some of them like the greatest movie of all time, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Is 500% better than any other movie ever made. So, you know, it kind of drags all the rest of the Spider-Mans with it.
Yeah.
So
none of that sissy Citizen Kane or Koyaanisqatsi nonsense here.
Yeah, none of that. We want only good Spider-Man movies on our list, and Spider-Mans are pretty good. So that's why it's my number three movie franchise. All right, before we get into our number twos, I just want to remind you that we do have a Patreon page. Patreon.com/majorspoilers is where you can go for extra stuff, behind-the-scenes conversations, and access to secret Discord servers and secret Discord server channels. a little bit. Just a couple of bucks a month keeps us going. We certainly could use it. We got new t-shirts on the way in 2022, 2023, kicking off in July. You'll be wanting to get one of those. Find out more when you become a patron and join us over at patreon.com/major spoilers. All right, Matthew, what do you have for your number two?
My number two movie is one of the, I think you can easily say, one of the formational bits of pop culture in my life, because I was born in 1970, like all the old people. So in 1994, I was in my early 20s. The world was our oyster. We were the Generation X, and we were going to change things, or at the very least, we were going to.
No, we weren't. That's why we were going to be the Generation X. We just sat around and did nothing.
You sat around and did nothing. Oh. I sat around and did nothing with style.
Whatever.
And so when Clerks came out in 1994, telling the story of, how shall I put this, jobs that don't necessarily have the satisfaction that you might expect. Please stand by. Allow me to transfer you at this time. That movie really, really stuck with me. And it's another film that was made for like, you know, 17, I think it was 27 grand is what he spent.
Yeah, 27, 30,000, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah, hawked his comic book collection, had cars that were washed out in a flood and used the money from that and blah, 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 blah. But basically it starts this, what Kevin and fans refer to as the Viewisk universe, which feels a little haughty, for this particular universe. And of course, there's a lot of different things to be found in this. It's a weird, if you call it a franchise, and I do, it's a weird one, because Clerks is kind of this, you know, day-to-day thing that has this weird dark thread under it. Mallrats is just flat out goofy meatballs comedy. Chasing Amy tries to be a complicated rom-com and almost makes the shot. Dogma ends up being this weird kind of, I don't know, almost quasi-religious thing where they're not even quasi. I mean, literally God is in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it tries to be this story examining religion and what it means. And then, of course, you jump to Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, which is the story of two stoners and a monkey hitchhiking across the United States. You know, by the time you get to the end of this, you get to Clerks 2. Clerks 2 ends up being a coming of age story where you fall in love with Rosario Dawson. And who born in the 70s doesn't want that? You know, I honestly can't remember anything about Jay and Silent Bob Reboot except that it had Kevin Smith's daughter playing Jay's daughter, I believe, something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, which. You know, if I were famous, I'd make my kid famous too. I can't necessarily throw much at that, but it's also got interesting stuff going on, but it did not necessarily stick with me, other than Val Kilmer and Melissa Benoist as Blunt Man and Chronic. That I thought was hilarious. But yeah, when you do get to that point where you're like, can I take these as a piece, as one whole big long story? Absolutely not. But if you enjoy it the way that I'm going to say the Pennsylvania Dutch people love a nice quilt where everybody brings their own square and the squares come together and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, then you can use the phrase Viewisk universe and only feel ridiculously pretentious and not overwhelmingly pretentious, but yeah, go watch Clerks. It's great.
All right, Rodrigo, what do you have for your number two movie franchise?
My number two movie franchise is probably not surprising to find on my list, but maybe surprising that it's number two instead of number one, and that's the Bill and Ted movies.
Mm. Bill I am and surprised Ted, that's not number one.
Yeah, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and now Bill and Ted Face the Music. I mean, I don't have much to say about them. If you like them, then you like them, and they're all good, and they're all kind of made with the same, I don't know, ethos. It's weird to say about movies like this, but they are. It's these fundamentally very good people who are also just absolute idiots in Bill and Ted. and they have misadventures through space and time and the underworld and the afterlife and everywhere else, in an attempt to make the future a better place. It's a weirdly hopeful series. It's an extremely quotable series.
Mm-hmm.
And it very much fits together, right? Bill and Ted Face the Music has some retcons and is also probably the most ignorable if you just want to have the first two, but you don't have to. Face the Music is pretty good, although you can see right where they ran up into their budget. It kind of feels like we're going to have like another half hour of movie and then they're like, nope, wrap it up. And I'm like, all right, okay.
Yeah.
Doesn't cool. that also have Kevin Smith's daughter in it?
Does it have Kevin Smith's daughter in it?
I don't know if she's in that or not.
Don't know. It has the girl. I don't remember what the other movie she's in it was. Probably as a feature, it has. It kind of moves the story from Bill and Ted to their daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Rufus's daughter is also in it. So I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah. It's some interesting stuff there. Bill and Ted, my number two movie franchise.
It does not show her in the Bill and Ted movies, Matthew. So okay. Sorry.
Maybe I'm thinking of the actress who played Rufus's daughter.
Maybe.
I know that's not her, but her voice is kind of similar.
As like Kristen Schaal is
Rufus's daughter. Music. Yeah.
Then Samara Weaving, who is like, I think, really blowing up right now.
Yeah, she's the one who looks like Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I know her. I've seen her murder people in like four different movies.
Yeah.
She's doing good in those movies then.
Oh, they're good movies. There's one where she like has to kill her mother-in-law, played by Sigourney Weaver.
Huh. All right. My number two, again, it's a franchise we thought was going to end, and then it just kept going on and going on and going on. And as of right now, I think this movie franchise will go on until our son goes supernova. And at which point there will still probably be three more films in the franchise that Lucasfilm says they're going to make. I am, of course, talking about Star Wars. I think that there is, if we look at the movies in groups of three, you know, first trilogy, second trilogy, last trilogy, and then the individual bits, you know, the Rogue Ones. Yes, exactly. The Last Supper, where Obi-Wan says, please, I've got the high ground, Anakin. There is a Star Wars for every generation. I know that's a Buffy kind of line right there, but, I think that this is something that is a franchise that is long lasting, that is ongoing, that will never go away. And even your kids' kids at some point are going to be introduced into a new trilogy of Star Wars films. And that will be their gateway into everything Star Wars. Other people younger than anybody on this show, 9, 10, 11 or whatever it is, the last three are the gateway for them. For my youngest, surprisingly, he's totally into episode 4. I mean, I walked downstairs thinking he was watching Obi-Wan Kenobi today. Nope. He was watching Star Wars New Hope. And I was like, cool. Star Wars, it's made $1 million billion, box office numbers, actual money. It's never made a single dollar, according to Lucasfilm and Disney. But the Star Wars franchise, I think, deserves to be in that top two spot. So that's why it is my number two. All right. We have hit our number ones. What movie franchise will be on everyone's number one list? Where are going to be the surprises? What's going to be missing? We're about to find out right now. Matthew, what do you have for your number one?
I think that people who know me, and I think that people who think of franchise in the current modern parlance, are going to be surprised that it took this long for there to be a superhero series on my list. But more importantly, I don't think they're going to be in any way surprised with this superhero's origin, except in as much as that it's not Super Sentai. It is, however, created by the same man, Shotaro Ishinomori, because my number one franchise is the Kamen Rider film series, currently clocking in at 68 movies since 1971. Basically, 50 years worth of Kamen Rider flicks. Many of them were in theaters. There are actually more that didn't go to theaters. But I think the thing that you have to look at in terms of, especially superheroes, which is kind of my area of expertise, I had an instructor in college who said, be a T-shaped man, have a wide base of knowledge, but then an area where you have great depth. And my depth is dudes in funny hats. And so throughout the history of your Kamen Rider, each year for several years, you got a new Kamen Rider. And then there was this long pause, and then boom, like, in 4 years, three cinematic films. And then when they relaunched in 2001 with Kamen Rider Kyuga, since then they have had Kamen Rider on television with two or three films in the theaters every single year. And there are there's hundreds of Kamen Riders because the first season, Kamen Rider, was at a point where you didn't have suit actors. You didn't have stuntmen. So the guy who played Kamen Rider broke his legs, was very, very badly wounded, and could not continue working. And they're like, oh, what do we do? Oh, here's his old buddy who all of a sudden now magically is also a Kamen Rider. So the fact that that first series had Kamen Rider 1 and Kamen Rider 2, it became commonplace to have two writers and then four writers. And then by the time you get to one series, it's 13 writers in the main series fighting each other. That's the one that became, Masked Rider Knight or Masked Rider Dragon Rider or something.
I think it's Masked Rider Fury Road.
I think it's Two Masked, Two Riderous. But if you have never watched a Kamen Rider, I'm going to be honest with you. This may not be the time to start because they're in the middle of a 50th anniversary season and they just crossed over with a 45th anniversary season of Super Sentai. And I literally need a slide rule, a scorecard, and like three bottles of beer to try and keep up with what's going on in Kamen Rider. But if nothing else, sometime this year, actually early next year, I believe, there's going to be a new film like in theaters, theoretically around the world in theaters for the 50th anniversary, Shin Kamen Rider. And if you go and watch this movie, it will have a man dressed like a bug on a really, really powerful little dirt bike. And I think that will give you the whole thing. So if nothing else, 68 movies will explain to you the wonder of a man dressed as a giant grasshopper doing wheelies in his backyard. And that's why Kamen Rider is my number one franchise.
All right, Rodrigo, what do you have for your number one?
So earlier I talked about what I think makes for a successful franchise, especially when you start with horror, is to then turn it into an action movie and then maybe have the next one be something else. Suspense movie or something, right? Or double down on the action, maybe. That like change, it still applies to this franchise, but amazingly, really what's really interesting about my number one is that every movie that they come out with is basically the same movie, and that doesn't seem to impact whether it's good or bad. Like, whether it's good or bad seems like a random roll of the die. And that's the Terminator films, right? Terminator T2, Terminator 3, Salvation, Genesis, and I forget what this latest one was.
Two-term, Two-inator, Dark Fate or Dark...
Dark Fate, yep. So, yeah. A lot of those middle ones were not great. Right. Terminator 1 was good. Terminator 2, I feel, is the supreme Terminator movie. And no Terminator movie afterwards has been as good. Terminator 3 wasn't great. Terminator Genesis is like, it really is like Terminator fanfic. is like every Terminator ever is there. Some new Terminators get
Terminator Highfather, Terminator Apocalypse.
Yeah, I mean it is like that, right? And it's like and
it
what
features
if
an obvious launching hook for a new series that never materialized, which
So it's you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, but at its core, a lot of the Terminator movies are either okay to very good, and I do feel that there are more good Terminator movies than bad Terminator movies, just because every once in a while, the hodgepodge of studio execs and nonsense that just tries to recycle the Terminator stuff hits on something that at least I like. Terminator, it's, again, surprising because, you know, maybe that's it. Some series are able to evolve, like the Fast and Furious films, and you might say, like, ha, 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 evolve, but it has. It has turned into something else to keep up with the times. Terminator hasn't. Terminator, every Terminator movie you see is probably going to be the exact same movie, and 18-wheeler is going to get blown up. You know, maybe instead of that, they'll drop the 18-wheeler from an airplane and they'll have to fight while everything's like falling off of a cargo plane, right? Or something like that.
Ludacris is flying into space.
Yeah, but it's basically the same movie. Terminator, it's good times.
Yeah, all right. My number one should come as no surprise to anyone. Unfortunately, it's the only movie in my list that only had two entries in it. But I still think that those two movies tell you everything you need to know about the franchise. And it's unfortunate that they never continued the franchise after that, because why would you after all? All you need are two Indiana Jones movies, and you don't need anything after that. Raiders of the Lost Ark and Temple of Doom. That's all. That's all you need. Who loves swashbuckling, stealing of ancient artifacts from tombs of other civilizations and screaming they belong in a museum? Everybody, especially if you get to punch some Nazis along the way. Indiana Jones, the number one movie franchise on my list. I just never know why. I mean, Star Wars is so popular. Never understood why they didn't make any more Indiana Jones movies after that second one. Probably because it was too scary. You know, reaching into a guy's chest, ripping out his heart, letting it catch on fire. Ugh. Little kid in a minecart. I mean, that's horrible right there, too. Monkey brains that you're eating for a delicacy. Ooh, I can see why you don't continue after that. Because
Interesting.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, what were your top five movie franchises? You can head over to the Major Spoilers Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free. Pop into the top five channel and share your list of your top five movie franchises. Everyone will share theirs as well. Everyone will read each other's comments on everybody else's. Why? I think it's obvious at this point. Everybody loves a list.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.